good morning. I'm sorry, I'm suffering from a little bit of a cold, but I will try and nobly go through this. The presentation I'm going to give in some ways is a lot less sophisticated than what you've seen so far, and yet I hope you'll find it of interest and importance, because it's really about the difficulties and challenges and I think an emerging solution to how we can get the original legal data in place. How do we measure the law? For years, the idea was sort of floated around, especially in lawyer circles doing public health law, that it would be nice if we could have a way to keep track of law over time. Because what would tend to happen is that somebody somewhere at CDC or somewhere else would get interested in what the state of the law X was, and you'd go out and do all this research and create a table that describes law X, and even by the time you sent it back to CDC, it was already out of date. And then the next time this issue came up sometime down the road, people would have to essentially redo the work because you had a static picture in time. So having no relationships, I could work on this issue with great concentration. And the team at PHLR has, I think, done I can say because it wasn't really me, did a great job making an advance in this area. So what am I talking about when I talk about public health law research? We are a program funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to support in all sorts of ways, including funding and technical assistance, empirical research on the impact of laws and legal practices on public health. So generally, we describe ourselves as a science organization, not as a law organization, which is important only so that people don't come and ask us for money to do doctrinal analysis, because that's not what we fund. Strangely enough, however, we found that actually doing legal research was one of the most important areas we had to do work in. We have been accumulating what we refer to as legal data sets from early days in our program, both doing it ourselves within our National Program Office staff and hiring or funding our grantees to do data sets. This was largely on the theory of if you build it, they will come. That one of the barriers to more frequent and rigorous evaluation of legal interventions in public health was simply the lack of data. We felt from observation and experience that a lot of people who are quite sophisticated in health research sort of throw up their hands when faced with the United States Code or the Purdon's Pennsylvania statutes, and in a sense wrongly so, because it was possible to think of all that text as just another form of data. And we thought if we showed that by reducing the words in the statutes to numbers in a data set, that this would encourage people to cross that psychological barrier and include more law in their analyses, both as independent and mediating variables. So we started as part of a larger process to put down on paper and sometimes on video basic empirical methods for public health law research, a project to create a sort of standard approach to doing legal research for quantitative research purposes. Now, we also realized at a certain point that if you had this data in the form that we were urging people to put it in, that it also made it much easier actually to get it out to the public. So even though it was designed to reach researchers, in practice, as a free gift with purchase, we had a way to make policy information more available to interested parties of all types. We started from, Science 101. We ought to, if we're doing legal research, just like any other data collection, ought to do it in a way that's transparent and replicable. And for certainly feasibility terms, it ought to be sustainable. And it should be not an amazing feat of gymnastic research, but something that anybody could do with a reasonable amount of attention and training. so that, you know, has the basic characteristics that you'd expect in any kind of data collection. We got to find the policies in a systematic and reliable way, which is in fact not a whole lot different from how lawyers normally do it, just a little bit different in how we record it. Then do the coding that allows you to see differences, and put that into a numerical form, and then generate all the nice materials that people need to actually conduct the research. And that was, we realized at some point, the path towards this idea of policy surveillance. So policy surveillance makes sense, right? Because in public health, we do surveillance of a lot of important phenomena that we regularly want to know the status of. We don't go out and say, well, it'd be interesting to know how many people died this year. Go check it out and then go back a few years later, so how many people died this year? You know, we have a system of vital statistics. Well, law is an obvious important factor in health. It's a factor of importance both because we use it as an intervention deliberately to improve health and because it's such an important and ubiquitous factor in our environment that it often has health effects, whether or not they're intended. So we like to know what's happening. So, you know, there's lots of different forms of public health surveillance, and policy surveillance is just one. And people like Jamie Chirico and others who've been pioneers in this area have for years been talking about why can't we do this with law? And the reason we couldn't, largely, is it was too expensive, and we had a cultural barrier. The way lawyers are trained to do research is not conducive to publicly available legal information. We do research as a craft, as a trade secret. If I'm a lawyer, I certainly expect I do my research better than you do it, and I'll be damned if I'm going to tell you how I did it. I win if I find a case that you don't find. That's not the right attitude for a scientific endeavor. The result of all this work was what we call Law Atlas, which was launched a couple of weeks ago on a beta site. If we had great internet here at the APHA, I could just show you how it works, but you can just go to lawatlas.org and play with it yourself if you have wireless or any time. And this portal, which is now has 5 or 6 data sets, eventually we hope will have dozens or hundreds of data sets if we can figure out a way to make it sustainable and have a group of collaborators and partners who can feed us the data. And it basically gives you all the things that we like in a policy surveillance portal. I hope they're all the things that you like as well. So you can go to the page at the data link, and you can download the original data for use in your own research. On a Creative Commons license, and we hope that people who do download data sets may, you know, come back to us someday with updated or improved data sets that we can post. And these data sets are accompanied by a code book, of course, and a protocol. And that's where our method differs somewhat from the traditional lawyer's method. Obviously, you have to document the process through which you collected that data and how you determined what was included and not included, how you made your key coding decisions, and so on. So we ask that one new step, as it were, of a lawyer doing this research to be more transparent about how they did it. But all that's available, on that website. We can also easily, because of the form of the data, generate the typical kinds of reports that you could find on a lot of web pages, state profile type things, or 50 state profiles that people can just download and use for the usual purposes that people use those for. And finally, there is the interactive law map section, which has, I'll show you in a bit what it looks like. But what I'll do today is just tell you how we make that, because the thing you don't see on this page is maybe the most important piece of this portal, and that is what we call the workbench. This is a place where people can go and make data sets. It's a complete coding software tool that allows, and as I'll run through, allows people to take what we used to do and turn it into what I hope we will all do as lawyers in this area in the future. So I'm using my former student and star Public Health Law Network lawyer, Corey Davis, who's also a PHLR grantee, so he does it all, but he doesn't mind being used as the kind of bad example here. This is some work that he did recently on naloxone access and overdose Good Samaritan laws for the network. It's obviously a very hot issue. It has to do with one of the leading killers in the country. And so what he did in doing this work was the way I would have done it right up until the time I started PHLR. So I went out and did the research by some mechanism known only to me. And then I kind of looked at all the laws, and I identified what the important provisions were, and I kind of pushed the pages around a little bit and started to say, well, they all have this characteristic, they all have that characteristic, and I sort of started to make my columns. And then I would indicate, you know, here's the citation, here's the characteristic, you know, X or no X, and then maybe I'd stick in some relevant text that would allow people to see at least some of what I was classifying. Now, this is done, right? This is a fixed table. It exists on the web. You can get it. It doesn't change, and there's not much you can do aside from read it, which in the old days we used to think was pretty good, reading law. But that's, you know, out of date. That's in the Twitter and computer age. So if we asked Corey to take this, and he worked with D'Amica Webb, who should wave her hand, who's our the guru and manager of this surveillance website, to work with D'Amica to take what he had done the old way and do it our way. So we start by, you start actually by getting registered with D'Amica and getting starting your own data set and starting to create the elements of it. And the first thing is to get the law into the platform so that when people are going to be doing the coding that they want to do, they have the law right there and can look at it. So we move all his law and his citations over into our system. The next thing is to figure out a scheme for coding, because the way that this can be easy is that you have a very logical, rational, well-thought-out, step-by-step group of questions that your coders go through on the software. And you create them in the software, and then all they have to do is look at the law and answer the questions. But to get there, you have to, you know, systematically and in advance figure out what that right and proper order is. And because we also want this to be a seamless one-button trip from the data set to the LawMap webpage, we also ask things like, give us the public description. In other words, what will the button be called on the final webpage? So all that gets moved over. The questions, we usually suggest that people do this kind of spreadsheet version first to have the questions in order, but what you see on the right, the weight number, that's the question number. And as you go through to the work on the workbench, you simply click a button, start a new question, fill in all these attributes, some of which populate automatically, various kinds of state identifiers and so on that you need for merging with other data. You know, one at a time, you get all these different features, which are written too small for me to see, but essentially capture all the dimensions that were captured in the original research, dimensions of interest, but now it's all laid out for you very simply where you type in citations, you type in numbers, and so on. This is what the questions look like that the coder sees. So the coder comes, we typically use law students, and this is set up to allow redundant coding, so you can have two or three or four law students, and each working independently in real time. And we go through and fill this out. And, you know, we have nice little features like, you know, there's a case that suggests this statute may not be constitutional or it's interpreted or something you want to add, or there's just some question that the coder has they don't understand, they want to discuss. You can put in these caution flags. This is what it starts to look like when you're seeing, when you're going to be reviewing what the results are, and you can see that there's all sorts of nice features like cloning. So if you're doing historical research going back in time, you can start with the record you have done, reproduce it, and then just put in the changes, which speeds things along quite nicely. Historical data sets are a great advantage for any kind of evaluative research, and the fact is that law, as you've seen in the previous presentations, does change quite a bit over time, and understanding that change is really, really important to understanding what's going on, what the trends are. So being able to, typically, if you're doing that kind of data set, you'll end up with many, many rows for each state, and there's lots of different ways to do it. Some people want to have a row for every month. Some people, you know, there's lots of ways to fiddle with it in this system. But the broad point is that you get to see, in the end, not only a good data set that somebody can download, but the public can go and see Corey's data set in this much more familiar form. A set of questions that allows you to track what happens over time, to pick out key variables that you want to see. So you just see the laws that have a naloxone program, or you just see the laws that have complete Good Samaritan immunity. It generates a table that allows you to see all the states in this form, as well as to actually get to the law and see the underlying law. So the advance here that we're advocating is that we start thinking about policy surveillance. We no longer do 50-state research just for ourselves and just for the moment, that we do it for each other, that we have an ethic of collaboration and shared legal data, and we hope that this page is a way to, or this system is a way to make that possible. If you are interested in doing research using this portal, interested in maintaining a page for data that you've created, we are busy figuring out different kinds of relationships that are both individually rewarding and economically feasible in this beta stage. We have curators now, people who've created data sets and who are featured as the creator of the data set. We're looking at institutional relationships where institutions might have pages. Certainly, of course, it's possible to mirror these pages from institution to institution. So, you know, the Governor's Highway Transportation Safety Association could have our really good distracted driving data set on their page, and it could be on ours as well, or if we did, if they wanted to start building their and maintaining their other driving related law data sets, they could make them on our system and show them in both places, potentially branded with their with all their logos and so on. But so far, I think we're very hopeful that this, if you build it, they will come approach is really going to help us get more legal evaluations done. You can see the, you know, when you have a data set like the ANR local smoking law data set, there's just a huge amount of stuff that scientists can do with it to understand better what's going on in policy. And if at the same time we can make that information available to a wide variety of policy constituents, we can also increase impact. Having the law can always draw eyes. I think that's why people, all sorts of organizations, put up those kinds of maps, because they figure anyone interested in that topic is going to be interested in the law is going to come. Well, if we can get enough of those eyes coming, then we can start directing them back to research. For us, that's what we're interested in, direct them back to the research, get them into the data. Other organizations may be interested in getting them into action or to policy relevant sites. So we're really quite optimistic that we can make this work, but we can only make it work if the community of legal researchers and evaluators gets behind it and works with us and helps us find a way to make this a big win for all of us. I think policy surveillance is now a feasible, practical idea. This system reduces the cost sufficiently, both of initial creation and of updating, that it's not crazy to think that a lot of this data could be maintained. But we're not there yet. So this talk is an invitation to all of you to join us and help us figure out how to make this work. Thank you very much.